Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're hanging until midnight. Tyler Zuli's here. Want to remind you, of course, we got a big one coming up. March 18th. Sixers-Raptors. But more importantly, for your purposes, the Fanatic Sixers knockout tourney is back. Keep listening all week as the Fanatic gives you a chance to play knockout on the Sixers court on Wednesday, March 18th. You'll score a pair of tickets to the Sixers-Raptors game. Then after the game, you'll experience what it feels like to play on the hardwood at the Wells Fargo Center. For your chance to win, keep listening all week. Presented by Trumark Financial, the only place to get the official 76ers credit card and enjoy exclusive Sixers experiences, merchandise, and more. Visit TRUMARK.com to learn more and apply. Let's go back to the phones with Michael in Ridley next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Michael?
Hey, Joe. How you doing? I know it's been a little while since I got a chance to call in. I'm actually heading home from Westchester right now, and I definitely wanted to call you and join
welcome back,
conversation.
Mike.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this six-game win streak's obviously a great time to start really hitting your stride, and those teams that hit their stride going into March and kind of is geared up ready for the playoffs. And we know they just swept another home-and-home. It's the third one in the last couple of weeks. This schedule that lies ahead, though, for March is really going to set the bar for where they're at. We obviously got the national game coming up with Washington on Wednesday, but and it's good not to see them looking ahead with that Rangers game. I was a little bit concerned about that on Sunday, but they took care of that pretty quick in that game.
Well, I mean, I thought about it. I'm sitting there thinking, how rare is it that you actually get both sets of a home and home? Like, we saw it happen so many times. We saw it happen to Washington. We saw it happen to Pittsburgh. We've seen it happen to a million teams where it's like you get a team once in their place or something like that, and then they come and get you at yours. The fact they were able to take care of the Rangers twice, who were pretty hot at that point, pretty good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So this team, just there's not a letdown with this team. I was a little worried that they might come out a little slow, especially on an afternoon game, and that goes to the coach. I mean, the Lanes have done a great job since coming on this year. Since the beginning of the year, they're 7-0-0 now following a loss. So they don't let the losses pile up. They're able to get back into that win column, continue piling up points. And unfortunately, Washington took care of business last night, but so we can't take over first if we were to beat them on Wednesday. But, I mean, it sets up well. They got Carolina at home and Buffalo and Boston before heading to Tampa next week. So they there's some tests coming up, especially with Edmonton coming in too. And I know they beat up on Nashville tonight. But I think it's there for the taking. And they're starting to exceed my expectations, and I don't see why we can't win this division.
Michael, great stuff, man. Thanks for the phone call. And I don't see any reason why not either. I mean, like, you look at the way that they're playing relative to everybody else in the division. There's no reason why you shouldn't feel great about the way that they're going. And it's not just about wins and losses. The eye test matters, and the Flyers are passing the eye test with flying colors. 610-632-0975. The Flyers' third period scoring this year. We were talking about fast starts for the Flyers. In the third period, they're outscoring teams 81-59. This according to the Fanatic research team headed by Tyler Zuli. Also assisted by Tyler Zuli and supported by Tyler Zuli.
Bugs Bunny.
Last year was 90-90. So, pretty big turnaround in terms of third period scoring. Now, there's still games left and against some good teams, but the Flyers are finishing games strong and not letting teams come back into it in the third period. They have more comeback potential than they've had in the past. There are tons of reasons to be optimistic about the Flyers. And I would argue fewer reasons to be optimistic about the Sixers this season, which is kind of why the question that you posed, Tyler, was relevant as to, like, should we turn our focus to the Flyers or, you know, is it still split allegiance, mostly Sixers, whatever? Like, for me, as I watch this, yeah, technically the Sixers could make a run. They have the ability, depending on what their matchup looks like and what their health is and the health of everybody else. Never thought they were going to beat the Chicago Bulls. Then you don't have Derrick Rose, you don't have Joakim Noah, and then all of a sudden anything's possible. But it's more like I think that I will be flipping the way that most people pay attention, which is to say pretty much be locked in on the Sixers and have an idea of what the Flyers are up to. Versus now, I mean, the Flyers, as far as I'm concerned, have earned the right to be in the driver's seat. They've earned the right to your attention. And the Sixers, until they claw it back, kind of are left to just get kind of the scraps, what's left. Now, it's not the same for people where basketball is your number one sport, or you never watch hockey, not even in the playoffs or anything like that. But, like, as an advisory, totally unsolicited, by the way, to the casual sports fan out there, it might be time to start moving ships from the Philadelphia 76ers to the Flyers. Because one team's ascending and one team is not at this point. Tyler, what's more disappointing to you? The injuries or the pre-injury performance for the Sixers?
I think when you get to this point with the injuries, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And still, we still continue to say when Ben gets back and Joe gets back, things may be okay, and that may be true. But the lack of consistency when they're all five of them, all seven of them, whatever number we thought was going to be
the core,
is so alarming to me that it has to be the pre-injury. The inability to win on the road is disgusting. The inconsistency is hurtful, and the rotation is still not correct.
Is there a correct rotation with this group? Like, that seems to be it's a flavor of the week kind of thing.
And I'm not going to be the guy that sits there and bangs my fist against the table and says, this five starts, then this guy, then this guy,
right.
This guy. That I'm not an NBA coach. I'm not as knowledgeable in the landscape of basketball as a lot of people are even in this city, let alone the guys that are on that coaching staff. But what I will tell you is nothing's worked, and I don't see an urgency to fix it.
That's why the Shake Milton question is so relevant, right? Because it's the first like bright spot that you could probably believe. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't want to take the wind out of anybody's sails. But if you were like, my God, Korkmaz has been the answer the whole time after he had, like, a good game or two, I don't know what to tell you. But Shake Milton going against the Clippers and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard the way that he did, I'm not saying that he's going to average 28 points a night for you. I'm saying that you have something there, perhaps. When we're asking how things fit together and who's going to step up and who's going to be the alpha dog. I'm not saying that Shake Milton should, but he was kind of doing alpha dog stuff against the Clippers. He was doing stuff that would lead you to believe that, hey, if the game's on the line and the ball's in his hands, you're not in terrible shape. You're doing okay. That's why the starting lineup or the role question or whatever it is comes up. Not because, oh my gosh, how could we not see how good Shake Milton has been this entire time? On the contrary, it's that nobody really has stepped up and seized that big time role. Nobody has come out and really said, I'm the guy, get behind me. I'm going to take you all the way. I'm going to get you a bucket when you need it. I'm going to get you a stop when you need it, et cetera, et cetera. Right? No one's really stepped up and claimed that role for the Sixers, whether it's because of injury or because of a roster that's been shaken up. And, you can lay out all of the different reasons for it. But the fact remains that we have not seen the quote-unquote go-to guy emerge. And for one night, Shake Milton looked like it. He's definitely earned the right to see some more. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti, at 97.5, The Fanatic. I don't know. Like, when I think about it, to get to this point, I don't even know. Like, I would have to literally go back and follow my trail of breadcrumbs to figure out at the beginning of the season, how did we get to have this conversation about the Flyers and this conversation about the Sixers? Because I wouldn't have been able to even track it.
Well, and it's kind of funny, too, because we talk about, moving benchmarks and moving goalposts,
yes,
and all that kind of stuff. And I try to do my best not to, because I try to hold each particular team to a standard at the beginning of the season that, barring cataclysmic injury, blown ACL, Achilles, those kind of injuries,
right?
You know, that you should still find your way to, which is why I think, looking at the Eagles, I think that they get a pass because of the fact that there was so many injuries,
sure,
that were season-ending or close to it. The Sixers haven't had season-ending yet. Ben Simmons may get to that point. We don't know. And if that's the case, I think that we can move the goalpost on this particular team. I don't think I move the goalpost on the coach, but I might be able to move it on this team.
Huh. So, like, just, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but, like, what if you didn't? Like, what if you didn't move the goalpost for the team? What does that mean?
Like, well, then they should still be at least, if we're not moving it at all, then they should still make an Eastern Conference Finals appearance.
But I guess what I'm saying is, to get the core of it, you say you don't move it for the coach, right? Which is to say that if they don't achieve that goal, that the coach is probably out the door.
I expect Brett Brown to win them some games.
Yes.
At this juncture, because of what they've got. You need a coach. I don't believe that Joe Girardi's going to give the Phillies 10 wins, but I do believe Joe Girardi gives them 2 or 3.
Okay.
You need Brett Brown to win you 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I don't know when they're going to come.
Maybe on the road.
That's probably it. Either on the road or in the playoffs.
That would be fun. Yeah, when I look at the expectations for this team, I have to admit that I'm in a different boat than you in terms of moving the goalpost, because, yes, injuries have come up with Embiid and Simmons, and those are massive injuries. My problem is that damage has been done way before that, where they're not in position to weather these injuries. They should be kind of up where the Bucks are, if our expectations were, you know, kind of in the same boat, to the point where you could literally drop games as Embiid and Simmons are recovering from injuries. You don't have to rush them back and still be okay because of all the groundwork that you laid in the first 60% of the season. And they're really not there. That's where it's not so much what happens now, but you're not in position to take advantage of the rest and things like that, that performing up to your potential would have merited.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I produced a show for you and Devon in September.
Yes, I remember that show.
I said 58. And I think you guys had a little less, like in the 55 range.
But still, like,
but
a
still
lot of wins.
Right up there.
Yes.
This team's not going to win. Are they going to win 50 games?
They might get 50 exactly. I was doing the math. I was like, they might get 50 exactly.
Because what are they right now? 30.
Let's see where they are.
7? 36? Off the top of my head. I know I've been away for a week. I probably should have caught up on the standings a little
done,
bit.
Done homework for this show? Yeah, me too. 37 and 24.
Okay, so in order to win 50, they've got to go 13-8 the rest of the way.
Right.
Can they go 13-8?
Maybe. Maybe. Hopefully. A lot of home games.
So 13-8 with the understanding that the Lakers are tomorrow.
Yes.
That's a tough game.
Kings and Warriors host the Pistons, host the Pacers, host the Wizards.
Oh, it's the Raptors.
Yeah, they got a lot of work to do.
Got a lot of work to do. I mean, and the thing is, too, when you look at the schedule, normally you would say, oh, they're going to Charlotte? Okay. But I don't feel that way.
Nope. We talked about this with Atlanta.
They're going to Chicago? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Home against Detroit. Going I feel good about that.
Going to Washington? Washington's been the place where teams go to die this season.
That is the truth.
They've beaten like 7 playoff teams in Washington this year.
Bradley Beal talking about putting up 50 points and losing. He's like, yep, you can put them with the other ones. I'm a winner. I don't care about this. Oh, but Bradley, we do. By the way, that's the answer. After the season, trade for that guy. They're not going to trade him because they got John Wall coming back.
For who?
Whatever.
What kind of movable pieces do you have?
That's you got to figure it out. That's the problem, is that you've got to figure out a creative way to make that happen. But he just signed the big deal, too. You've got some big deals.
Like, I don't mean to, like, overtake your show, but I'm just trying to put this together in my head.
Oh, I've got some ideas. None of them would make people very happy, because the moves that you want is, like, would Al Horford and, like, a first-round pick do it for Bradley? Those are not the moves that you would need to make happen. But well, I'm just
I
saying.
Mean, no, it's. I mean, it's going to have to involve
A large piece.
Ben or Joel, and I don't know if anybody's going to be wanting to do that. Mm-hmm.
Or Tobias Harris, you know, the highest paid player on the team. You know? Totally a max player and deserving of that respect, around the league.
I've never seen one person hate a document more than you hate Tobias Harris' contract.
Oh, it's horrible. And I'm glad that you said that, because I have absolutely zero beef whatsoever with Tobias Harris.
Oh, no, you've made that very clear.
It's zero.
Like, if you could fight a document, you might.
That'd be it. Line it up. Let's get the tail of the tape. Sorry. I'm not saying it's a franchise-wrecking contract. It's really not pretty. People complaining about the Al Horford contract. I'm like, look at this! Yeah, I don't know. We'll find a way. But all I'm saying is, if you are a pace and space team, which you might not be by that point if Brett Brown is no longer the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, but if he is, and spacing and shooting is an issue for you, Bradley Beal can do this. Bradley Beal can help you in a lot of different ways. Unfortunately, couldn't trade for him because of the clause in his contract and stuff like that till after this season. Would be very useful with this group in particular. But that's all we're talking about, Shake Milton and surviving and everything else. Brian tweets in, if Simmons returns before the playoffs at 100%, the Sixers have a better chance of advancing further than the Flyers. I'm basing that solely on experience, that it's tough for young defensemen to survive the crucible of the NHL playoffs. Hope this Flyers team is different. It's true, but they have had Matt Niskanen, who's won a Stanley Cup. Justin Braun has gone to a Stanley Cup. They're not all young defensemen. They do have young defensemen. That's absolutely true. You know, it's going to be, if they continue to advance and they go on in the playoffs, it's going to be the first time through for Provorov, first time through for Sanheim. Totally get that. But they've got some other guys who've been through the wars, too. 610-632-0975, your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. I'd like to see some better numbers from the goalies, though, too. I'm a big save percentage guy. I know that there are some people that are not save percentage guys. I'm a big save percentage guy. I'd like to see the save percentage a little higher.
I think on the surface, it's super telling. I mean, because, you know, we can always go back and say, well, did he get a lot of work in that night? And,
right.
And if, you know, if you save 15 shots on 15 of 16, your percentage isn't going to look nearly as good as if you save 24 of 25. But, I mean, if you made 12 game-changing saves,
right,
then, you know, that's where the eye test comes in. But the numbers on the surface, to me, it's kind of like ERA with a pitcher. It's really the only thing that matters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I'm torn on that, too, because I'm a big whip guy, and I know a lot of people are not big whip people.
If you want to walk down that road, VABIP is the best stat for a pitcher in the game.
So, and what people bring up for goaltenders, for example, is, I guess, save percentage above expectations is, like, one of the advanced stats, which is, like, I guess measuring good saves, like saves where you're like, okay, that guy should have had that one versus that guy shouldn't have had it and made it. Then again, I don't know how big that is, because every coach that I've ever had as a hockey goalie is like, if you make two saves that you're not supposed to make, we're probably going to win the game.
So that stat, I would assume, is like the, I mean, we could probably just retitle it like the Henrik Lundqvist save
right,
percentage.
Right, we're like, come on. Yeah, exactly.
I was texting back and forth with Pat during the during the Sunday game.
Okay, the Flyers-Rangers. Second Flyers-Rangers game?
The one that yes. Lundqvist started.
Yes.
And I simply texted him was, why do his defensemen not play the way they do when Georgiev and Shesterkin are playing?
I know.
Like, it's disgusting how they leave Lundqvist out to dry.
I know. And it's so different from early in his career, not to take anything away from Lundqvist, but the Rangers didn't score any goals because Chris Drury and company, like, everybody was just packed around Lundqvist, and he was never seeing a whole lot of shots. Now they trust him too much. Now it's like, the Hank's got it.
Trust the guy that's, now he's old?
Right,
now
exactly.
You trust him?
He's got it. He's good. That's a very astute observation. But yes, I think that both of those guys have save percentages that are not anything to write home about.
Well, and then the conversation shifted to Panarin should be the MVP, and I'm like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah.
The guy's been unreal.
He totally deserves to be in the conversation. 100% deserves to be in the, especially considering the tear that he's been on. I don't think he's going to win it, though. Carter Hart's save percentage is .909. I like my goaltenders to have a save percentage above .915. So that's totally, totally within reach. Brian Elliott at .899, also within reach. has some more work to do in order to get there. But the group has done well. The tandem has done well. They've done a 40-game to 30-game split. Hart started 40. Elliott started 30. Hart is 22-12-3. Elliott is 15-7-4. Good enough. Good enough.
That's exactly where you need the backup to be.
Yep. Good enough.
Win you a couple games. I mean, and quite honestly, too, if you think about this season, can you go back in memory, how many games did Brian Elliott single-handedly lose the Flyers?
Very few.
I think I've got two that come to mind, and they're early in the season.
Where he'd give up like three or four in the first period and get yanked.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
He's been sustainable.
I think so, too. And the truth is about Brian Elliott that he's always operated as he's operated better as part of a tandem, either the 1A or the 1B, whichever he was asked to do. But he's always been better that way. With Carter Hart being the future, totally makes sense. The arrangement works out perfectly for the Flyers here. All right, 610-632-0975. Plenty of show left as we are hanging out until midnight. Tyler Zuli is producing. This is the Joe Torti Show. We're rolling on until the witching hour right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli producing this evening's program as we roll on for another half hour or so until midnight. It's been fun so far. Haven't even been discussing this regarding the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think it's worthwhile. Been a couple things that have come up regarding the Eagles that we haven't even addressed or talked about. Draft is still a little while away. Fascinating looks recently because the Eagles are attached to literally everyone. From Nick Foles to Yannick Ngakoue to trading Alshon Jeffrey to Byron Jones, who reportedly the Eagles are going to be first in line to talk to Byron Jones from the Dallas Cowboys. Shore up their corner situation, because at this point, we don't know who's going to play corner. At this point, I think there are zero corners that you're aware of locked into starting roles on the team. Good athlete, good cover corner, versatility to play safety as well. But the question is, Tyler Zuli and Philadelphia, 610-632-0975, are you breaking the bank for a corner? A, from Dallas, but more importantly, B, who, since he was a first-round pick in 2015, has two career interceptions.
Yes.
Yes?
I am, because if you look at all of the other statistical things that he has going for him, targets, receptions per target, yards per target, yards per reception, they're all insanely low. Guy's a shutdown corner.
All right.
I think he's more of a shutdown corner than what you're going to get in the draft. It kind of always brings me back to that Family Guy scene where it's like you can have the boat or you can have the mystery box.
I think I've quoted this like more than any other Family Guy thing. Yes,
it's an
lay it out there.
It's an incredible scene because you know what the boat is. And he even says, who knows what's in the mystery box? It could even be a boat.
Could be anything.
So if it's a boat, you already have a boat. So why hope for a boat when you know you have a boat? Why hope for a shutdown corner when you know you have a shutdown corner? Dallas would be very foolish to let Byron Jones go.
Well, I mean, so think about it. They might not want to let him go. Do they have tons of choices? Because they've got a lot of financial stuff that they've got to clear up
here. I think
that
it's probably him or Cooper would be, you know, on the forefront, I would imagine.
Right. Plus Dak. I mean, you've got Dak to deal with.
Right. So let me ask you this, because I know that you're a staunch anti-Amari guy.
Yes, I would say that that is
so
true.
So if you're signing two of three, isn't the answer pretty clear?
I think so, with one asterisk, right? If I'm Dallas, I've survived by having what I would call way above average talent on the defensive line and the linebacker position. Otherwise known as, the Eagles / Giants method of if you can dominate up front, then it almost doesn't matter what you're doing at the back. If I think that my offense is so good, if I get Cooper back, and if I have Elliott and the offensive line plays better, and if I have Dak, if I think that that is what makes my team special, then I am tempted to keep Amari Cooper, even if it means losing Byron Jones. But me being me, I don't think that. I don't think that Amari Cooper is that special. So I would absolutely, if it came down to choosing between one of those two, Byron Jones would be my selection.
So, and that's the thing is, if I'm playing the Cowboys GM right now.
Yes.
And I look at the cornerback crew in the draft, and I look at the receiving crew in the draft. C.J. Henderson slots perfectly at 17 for them out of Florida.
Uh-huh.
But is C.J. Henderson or everything else more important than all of these receivers that you can look at?
Sure. Plus, he's probably the second corner in the draft.
Well, right? Yeah, it's Jeffrey Okuda's number one.
But what I'm saying is
he should be long gone.
Is the number two corner often sliding down to 17? Like, the corner's kind of a premium position, so it gets inflated sometimes, like pass rusher and, like, quarterback, right? So I don't even know if you are the Cowboys. Can you roll the dice? Like, do you want Damon Arnett to be your choice at 17 or Trayvon Diggs or some of these other guys? I don't know. I mean, it's totally 100% valid, especially because, like I said, if you are a sane general manager, you have to get two wide receivers from this class. Like, you have to dip into this twice because they're so good. I don't know if you could do that if you're Dallas and commit those resources like that. It's a great point by you. By the way, I really don't care for this corner class at all. I think Okuda's really, really good at the top. I think it is a paper-thin class.
I think Christian Fulton can play as well.
You like Fulton, too?
I do.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I do, but I also don't know, was Fulton a product of that secondary?
As you know, I love all LSU corners.
With Fulton and Delpit.
Yep.
You know, does that become a hodgepodge of good players?
Do you want the set? Well, I would go a step further. Do you want definitely the second guy when Delpit was the best corner in the country? Like, you know what I mean? Do you want...
Well, and the guys, you know, and Delpit's going to play safety in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty...
I think that's true, too.
But he's kind of Jalen Ramsey.
Bounce around all over
the place.
Yeah,
he can do a little bit of everything. Yes. You're probably right.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to sign up for the second guy again.
You talk about... I mean, talk about paper-thin depth at cornerback. I mean, I'm just looking at one particular... You know, rankings list.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth best safety comes from Lenore Ryan College.
Wait, what's his name? That's the guy who can run and jump.
Kyle Duggar.
Yeah, I think he's like a physical freak.
Yes,
but yes,
but that's the point. I mean, that's like, and now granted, listen, the guy has been really good for Tampa Bay, but that is like ranking Ali Marpet from Hobart as your fifth best tackle.
Right, sure.
And again, he's been great.
That's not the point.
Not the point.
Yep, absolutely. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Man, oh man. I don't know. I still am not sure if I'm on board. If the Cowboys are content to let somebody go, is that the guy that I want? But in this particular case, as we just laid out, it's kind of like a choosing one or the other situation. Between Cooper and perhaps Byron Jones. Let's talk about Andre Dillard for a second here. What's your concern level that Andre Dillard and his name have come up in trade talks? Because if you remember way back when, it feels like it was 5 years ago when Jadeveon Clowney was made available for trade, I said it cost Dillard. That's what it's going to cost. Are you going to do it? Because that's the team that wanted him and that you traded in front of to begin with. Everybody said, absolutely not. Hell no.
I was willing to do it.
I know you were. That's why I'm asking you now. The reports that the Eagles are thinking that he might not be ready to take over at left tackle in year two, that has me ready to throw the guy out the window. hopefully onto like a nice comfy mattress or nothing bad happens to him. But like a guy that you trade up for in the first round, year two, you're not ready at left tackle. That screams to me that that's a big problem.
Sure. And it may not be anything if things get righted by, you know, the first week, especially if he's starting. But if I was willing to do it for Jadeveon Clowney, who I think is a good to really good defensive end.
Okay.
I am driving Andre Dillard to Duval for Yannick Ngakoue.
Yes.
Yannick Ngakoue was a guy that I thought was first round talent when he came out of Maryland and slipped into the third round. By the way, when you look at that draft class that the Jags had, those first three rounds should have been unreal.
Was that the Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, or flip that?
Jalen Ramsey in the first, Miles Jack in the second, Yannick Ngakoue in the third.
Crazy.
That's a steal.
Yeah.
The fact that that defense couldn't put it together was unbelievable.
Pretty ridiculous. Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I would. He can hop in my Honda Civic.
Uh huh. You'll take him there.
And I will drive him there. We may not make it.
I was going to say, he's going to kind of do like Flintstone-style stuff, I think, in your Civic. You know, feet going through the floor.
Well, I meant more on the fact that my car may not make it.
I see.
But we're going to try.
Going to make it happen. All right. 610-632-0975. I was distressed when I heard that. When I heard that Jason Peters might be coming back. And, side note, they are not sure that Dillard is ready to take over at left tackle. Because here's the problem. I get that you have to plan for the future. Who was supposed to be the Eagles' left tackle of the future? Lane Johnson.
Yeah.
Don't worry about paying him all this money as a right tackle. It's going to look really good when he's like a middle-paid left tackle. That hasn't worked. And the reason it hasn't worked is because Jason Peters has stayed around, and because Lane Johnson is so freaking good at playing right tackle that if you moved him over, you're weakening your offense. I am concerned about the plan is to have Jason Peters for one more year and have Dillard take over the year after that. You kind of have a year where he's under Jason Peters' wing. You trade up for a guy, he better be ready to go, and the only reason that he's not on the field is because Jason Peters is there. Or a better player, whatever, is there. I don't like this. I don't like what's going on with the offensive line, considering the fact that it's been a strength for a long time. It's about to become a weakness very quickly. If Kelsey's not there, if Peters isn't there, and I'm not talking about this upcoming year, in years to come here, you better have replacements ready. And I'm just not sure that they do.
I'm still worried about the left guard position.
Yeah?
I don't buy Sam Malu.
I get that. I understand. Man, it's something that we got to think about. More Eagles stuff as well, because I haven't gotten to everything. We've got to share that. We've got to take a walk around the show, figure out how we even got to this point. And then, of course, get to the often imitated, never duplicated one more thing. All of that is coming your way in a matter of moments. 610-632-0975, your phone calls as well. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. All right, Football Outsiders did this this bold moves for every team kind of situation. Did you see what the one was for the Eagles?
I have not.
Okay. So they went around the league and were like, this is a bold move for every team. And for the Eagles, the ESPN via Football Outsiders said that the Eagles sign quarterback Taysom Hill from the Saints in order to load manage Carson Wentz on a game-by-game basis. Okay? So this is the premise. The premise is that since Wentz has been banged up and injured and stuff like that, you get Hill to come in and play. First of all, he's a restricted free agent, by the way. So you have to deal with the restrictedness of free agency. Then play him 10 to 15 snaps per game under center. The idea is that it would reduce Wentz's injury risk, ease Miles Sanders' transition to a workhorse role. I think he's already in that role. and provide Hill 200 or so snaps a quarterback to prove to future teams that he's capable of being a starter. This might be a hard sell for Hill this offseason despite his divisional round breakout performance. He's attempted just 15 regular season passes in his three-year Saints career. Outside of the fact that Taysom Hill's 30 years old, and this is literally his best chance that he's ever going to get to be a starting NFL quarterback, which, by the way, he's not, and he's not going to get the chance to be. I don't know if I could more strongly disagree with an idea than I do the idea of taking Carson Wentz off the field for 10 to 15 snaps per game.
I think that's a horrible idea. And I'm probably the biggest Taysom Hill guy at this station.
I'd fight you, but yes. Like
it's a horrible...
I don't understand.
Horrible idea. I did see something the other day off this quarterback conversation that said that if the Colts were to draft a quarterback, that maybe they don't bring back Jacoby Brissett.
Uh-huh.
That is a amazing option as a backup quarterback.
As a backup, yes.
Now,
I agree.
I don't believe... I think he'll get starting a chance to start somewhere,
mm-hmm.
but I would be thrilled if he would be the backup quarterback.
He might go back to New England. For
quite,
all we know.
Quite possibly. Maybe right? The starter there.
Exactly. Might walk into that job if that's the case. Here's my problem with the taking Wentz off the field for 10 to 15 snaps per game situation. What's the phrase that coaches use? We can't live in our fears. Carson Wentz, the thing that makes him special is that literally on any play, he can score a touchdown. Whether it's on the ground, extending a play, chucking it deep, he can do something special. If you remove him for 10 or 15 plays, you're removing 10 or 15 chances for something special to happen. The equivalent would be DeSean Jackson gets banged up all the time, so you've got to hold him off the field in a lot of situations and only save him for when you really need him. The whole point of having DeSean Jackson is that literally on any play, if you don't defend it properly, he's going to get behind you and you're going to give up a 60-yard touchdown. That's the whole point of it. That's the whole point of having a quarterback like Carson Wentz. Otherwise, you just go and get a captain checkdown type dude who's never going to turn the ball over, and you just live like that. That's not what the Eagles chose to do. I hate this idea. I get that you got to come up with something for every team. I don't like that at all. It's a really, really bad idea.
Not good.
So you're saying the ESPN has a mock draft going
now? Yes, they're running a mock draft right now. They have the Eagles selecting a wide receiver.
Oh, they do.
In the first round.
Which wide receiver?
That would be Justin Jefferson.
No one's going to be happy except me if that happens.
He's a great ball player. He's just not your burner.
I get it. I love Justin Jefferson.
Although, I got to tell you something. I don't know how much I buy into this ESPN mock draft, and these guys know a ton.
Uh-huh.
But every report that I have read out of every camp, everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that the Cardinals are going to be using the 8th pick on a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They did not select a wide receiver in this mock draft.
Mm. Did someone slide that should not have slid?
So, I believe, if I can, they took the ticker off because they're in commercial.
Gotcha.
CeeDee Lamb went 12.
Okay.
And then, Judy went to the Jets.
Okay.
And then CeeDee Lamb went one pick behind him.
Yeah, my bold prediction is that Judy will not be the first wide receiver selected.
Lamb or Ruggs?
Probably Lamb, then maybe Ruggs, then maybe Judy.
Ruggs because of the speed.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. If Judy's there at 21 for whatever reason, you know, he slides tremendously, that card should be in...
Immediately.
In 6 seconds.
Correct. I would even say the same with Justin Jefferson, actually, because you know I've loved that guy for quite some time. Everybody is all about Henry Ruggs, and I completely understand why.
It's the burner speed.
You need to understand that, and I'm telling you this ahead of time so that you don't get hurt. He's Luke Kuechly. He's Christian McCaffrey. You're never going to have a chance. This is not like a, hey, should we take him? Should we trade up a couple spots? This is the guy that you're never going to have a chance at, is Henry Ruggs, because he's going to go at least in the top 12. At least. I just don't want to set anybody up for being disappointed. It's never going to happen.
Also saw KJ Hamler at 30.
Hmm.
I think that's insane.
That's tough. Then again,
he's
someone
Ruggs.
Has to slide.
He's Ruggs. Minus 6 inches. The guy's tiny. I can't do it in the first round.
I can't do it. I like Rager from TCU.
The kick and play.
I like that guy.
He is adamant. If you follow him on Twitter, he is adamant about watch the tape. Because his numbers don't compare to Judy and Ruggs and Lamb because he didn't have a guy that was throwing to them that's an NFL quarterback.
That's exactly it. So I would not be upset with that. It's not Brandon Ayuk's fault.
Don't want Brandon Ayuk.
I don't want a Pac-12 receiver. I'm sorry.
Laviska Shenault.
Core surgery already. I'm all right. I'll hold off. All right, it's time for the often imitated, never duplicated, world famous, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
This one comes to us from the glorious world of spring training where everyone hates the Astros. I'm not even talking about the people that are mocked, that are mic'd up talking trash on the Astros during spring training games on live television. No, I'm not even talking about that. Instead, I turn my attention to Cincinnati's Trevor Bauer, who is intentionally tipping pitches to avoid any more sign stealing. To do this, he's making the glove gestures that you usually see pitchers making when they're warming up in between innings and stuff like that, or in the bullpen, literally telling the hitter where the pitch is going to go. Because he doesn't want to get the sign stolen, so he wants to give them up freely. If we thought that the bad blood was going to go away, it's already into competitive game-type situations. This is going to be awful for the Astros this year.
We have adult Zach Greinke around now.
Yes.
I need 19-year-old Zach Greinke. Like the Zach Greinke that told everybody he was going to be a shortstop Zach Greinke. Because he would have a field day with this Astros thing.
Oh, man. So here we go. This is what Derek Dietrich told Fox Sports. If you followed baseball this offseason, there's a little thing going on with sign stealing. So Trevor's not too fond of it, so he figured he's going to try something new this season, and he's going to just start telling batters what's coming in order to not get
stolen. You don't even need to do the signs. The glove signs, nah, just can it.
Just yell at
him. Curveball, it's coming.
It's coming. Nope, look lower. Lower, perfect. That's what it's going to be. Man, oh man. I'm telling you, for people being like, everybody cheats in baseball, there's not going to be this amount of bad blood if everybody cheats this way in baseball. Just, there's no way. The fact that this is the player's reaction should kind of tell you how quote-unquote widespread cheating is in baseball at the Astros level. All right, that's going to wrap things up from here at our spacious, under-construction Ballykinwood Studios. Please pardon our appearance as we're making ourselves more beautiful for you. You can't tell because we're on the radio. Thank you very much to everybody who called and tweeted in, my co-host for the evening. Thank you very much to Devon Gibbons for sharing the microphone with me. And Tyler Zuli doing a tremendous job producing as per his usual standard. I will be back on the air on Wednesday. This is Joe Torti saying so long. Thanks for joining, and I'll talk to you next time right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.